So I had August as holiday time, and some of you may remember that the week before I left on holidays, I preached on the notion of rest and Sabbath, and I, rather cunningly I thought, worked in some thoughts about my preoccupation with cycling, telling you that I'd signed up to take part in the Tour de Victoria in August, which is a 140-kilometer mass participation ride around the Victoria region. And so I can now inform you that I completed the ride. Applause. And I did so in what I thought to be a vaguely respectable time for a 62-year-old guy who'd only been riding a road bike for a couple of months. If they had a medal for finishing 506th, I would have gotten it. Interestingly enough, on the day when I looked at the results, I was 501st. But somehow, I've subsequently lost 5 places. And that puzzles me, but anyway, that's another story. Anyway, it was tremendous fun. And I would do it again in a heartbeat. In fact, this bad. If someone had asked me to do it the following day again, I would have. It was that much fun. So here's the back story. As a good many of you know, I took up cycling a couple of years ago. And over time, it developed into something of an obsession. And Adele and Diane have had to put up with far too much conversation about times and heart rates and mileage and, well, discs versus caliper brakes. And I just want to publicly thank them for their forbearance, and God bless you both, because it's not over. Well, let's not go into the spandex thing. Though I did look rather fetching, I thought.
In your mind.
Because this is a recorded sermon, there's another story I'll tell you that is not will not be recorded. But anyone who wants to hear it, I'll tell you about it. As some of you know also, I lost a little bit of weight. And no, I've not been sick. It's a sign of health. And I began to feel pretty good. I realized that I really liked riding a bike, but particularly on the road. And so I began to become a bit more motivated. Earlier this year, I heard about this event called the Tour de Victoria, and I got it in my head that working towards participating in this would be a really good goal. And I wasn't going to participate in the 45-kilometer portion, nor was I going to participate in the 85-kilometer portion. No, I wanted to be part of the longest one, the full 140 kilometers. So I started doing some relatively serious training. So, and it's not just regular rides, but I was riding 4, 5, and 6 days a week. And I was trying to increase the length and effort. And of course, and eventually I realized I needed a new bike. You can never have enough bikes. So as you know, I got a nice new road bike and I showed it off to here one Sunday morning. And that was in June. And that took my training to another level. And it did so in a couple of ways. First, road bikes handle differently than other bikes. They have a unique way of working. And I had to quickly learn how to ride competently and safely. Because they're much lighter and they go really, really fast, which is fun, but a bit scary. And here's the important thing for today. I had to start to learn to ride with other people. I had to learn to ride in groups. That is quite different than riding on your own. My friend Jamie is a longtime road cyclist, and he's very good, He has been so helpful in teaching me tips and tricks, and I just want to say I thank him publicly for so much. He's been so helpful. Now, one of the things that successful cycling requires, of course, is the ability to climb, to go up hills. And I knew that the Tour de Victoria had some 2,200 meters of vertical climb over the distance. And some of those hills are ridiculously long. And a few of them are quite short, but very, very steep, like they're a 20% grade. And if you don't know what a 20% grade is, it's a hard climb, walking, never mind cycling. And so what I did is I went up looking for hills to climb. And I found them. And yes, it was hard. At the beginning of August, my pal Jamie suggested that we ride up Mount Washington for a training ride. And because, as you know, I'm a complete idiot, I agreed. Essentially, it's 18 kilometers of one long hill. And I pretty much thought I was going to die. In fact, I was hoping for death at a couple of points on the trip. The first 2 kilometers are actually probably the hardest. They just sap your will to live. Just unrelenting. And partway up, I had to stop because, well, I noticed that my heart rate was over 180 beats per minute. And that's a bit high. And so I told James, keep going. And I will be there eventually. And so I stopped and I took a breather and I started out again. And that whole scenario repeated itself several times. But every time I got to a flat spot, I would find Jamie there waiting for me. See, Tevis had warned him that I might need resuscitation. And so he'd say, how are you doing? And you might want to try this, you might want to try that. And then off we'd go again. Eventually, to my delight, we got to the agreed upon destination. And then he said, you know, we can go just a bit higher. And I said, have you lost your mind? Or words to that effect. And he said, let's get to the highest spot. Just trust me on this. And so we ground our way up the last couple of unnecessary kilometers to the highest point of the ride. Couldn't go any higher on a bike on the mountain. And I was really, really tired. And darn it, he was right. He was absolutely right. I was really chuffed that we'd done the whole distance. See, since I've thought about that day, I realized that if I had been on my own, I might have given up. But because we were together, I stuck with it. And perhaps it's some pathetic testosterone-fueled sense of competition. Could be part of it. But there's more. I didn't want to disappoint either of us. I trusted his experience in telling me that we could do it. And honestly, his encouragement made all the difference. Also, to do a bit of training, I did some riding with a group of guys who go out riding every Wednesday night. They also go out Sunday mornings. They've invited me to go with them then. I have shown great restraint. As I pointed out, they do have a different gig on Sunday mornings. But the Wednesday evenings have been fun, but they have been no less challenging. These guys are generally a bit younger than I am. They have lots of cycling experience, and they go really fast. But they are a most welcoming group, and they're happy to teach newbies like me. One of the things that I've been learning to do is a kind of a slipstreaming. You've seen cyclists doing this. You ride really, really close together, and you want the wheels of the bikes to be like within a foot of each other. And when you're doing 40 to 45 kilometers an hour, that's just a little hair-raising. But that being said, it makes riding noticeably easier. It's estimated that in large groups of riders, the ones you see in the big bike races, in the midst of that pack, called the peloton, in the midst of that pack, those riding there are using up to 40% less energy. It's rather like the migrating geese we're starting to see now. It's exactly the same principle. Someone leads for a while, and then they draw back, and someone else leads for a while. And so the group can go farther and faster using less effort. It really does work. And then after the ride, usually over pizza and whatever liquid refreshment you favor, you gather together and you talk about how the ride went and the successes and what you could do better next time. And you laugh a lot about your failures, because everybody does at some level. That's what makes it interesting, trying to get better each time. Those are some of the things I did to try and prepare for the big day. But here's another one. I talked a couple of friends into going in the tour with me. I'd like to show a picture of my friends Dylan and Scott. Do we have that there? Here we are. This is Scott, and this is Dylan, and there's yours truly. Now, as you can see, Scott's my age, looking a bit grizzled there, Scott. And Dylan's 35. And neither of them had done a ride like this before either. But both of them are really, really fit. Like Dylan runs up the grouse grind. And Scott, like, he is a brilliant squash player and has been for years. And, like, he was nationally rated. I mean, they're both really fit. And then there's me, right? I had no worries about that they were going to do well. But more importantly, there were two nicer guys you could not meet. And I knew that we would really enjoy one another's company over the distance. And in preparation, we did a bit of riding together beforehand, and we did all sorts of strategizing on how we were going to approach the big day. The night before, we stayed at Scott's place. He and his wife, Kim, they live in Oak Bay. So we stayed there. And honestly, I saw Dylan last night, actually. We were chatting. And it was like kids on Christmas Eve. Like, we could barely sleep. We were checking and rechecking our equipment and going over our plans and went to bed at, I think, about 11 o'clock. I didn't get to sleep till 12:30. And I woke up at 5:30, the agreed-upon time, where we had a specially designed breakfast. And then we went down to the starting line, which is in front of the provincial legislature. There was a 7 o'clock start, and off we went in a pack of about, I think it's about 650 people. The remaining 600 or 700 riders would be joining us a little later on in the ride. And, of course, the keeners in the front, they charged off at the speed of light. And the others of us left at, I would describe, a somewhat more dignified pace. Though, honestly, the excitement of the day had us all moving faster than we should have. And we could ride quite quickly. All the roads were closed off just for us. It was great. So we were always being waved through intersections and stuff. And so we moved really quickly. At least we were moving quickly until we came to the first climb. And it was a bit of a nasty one. And all of a sudden, this pack of people started to stretch out a bit. And then there was some more flat, and then there was more climbing, and some more flat, and then more climbing, and the group got more dispersed. And of course, I am trying to remember to drink regularly as I ride. I was trying to remember that I need to take food every hour, because you're burning calories at a ridiculous rate. And of course, I need to get out of the saddle every 10 to 15 minutes. I need to change my position a bit. And I sure hope that's not a cramp. And I must remember to pedal up as much as I'm pedaling down. And should I be on the drop bars for this hill or not? And then I think I can make up some time on this downhill portion, but should I pass them here? And if I wait behind this pack of people, if I pass them now, aren't I coming up to a hill, and I really need to reserve some energy for that hill? All I'm trying to say is it's actually more complicated than it looks. There's actually a lot going on. Now, the course went through a downtown portion of Victoria and the Gorge, out to Machosin, Langford, Millstream, up and down the Saanich Peninsula, eventually down the coastline through Cordova Bay, down Dallas Road, and then back to the legislature. And of course, we finished. And it felt good. It was wonderful cruising across the finish line. We were nowhere near the front of the pack. But indeed, we finished. And that was good enough this time around. Three things stand out for me. And each of them surprised me, at least a bit. First was this. All through the route, there were people standing at the end of driveways. there were people sitting in deck chairs with kids and grandkids. And they would wave and yell out words of support and ring bells as we pedaled by. Happened all along the course. Sometimes there'd just be a single person there. Sometimes it'd be whole families. One of my faves was a group of about 25 people. They were sitting on patio furniture at the end of their yard, in front, right beside the road. They were drinking beer. I think they were eating barbecue. It was 9 o'clock in the morning. We didn't stay too long. No. These were a group who were having just like... They were having way too much fun. But they were yelling things like, "Well done! Hang in there, you're going great, only 80 kilometers to go." And you know what? It was really wonderful. It made a difference. I was surprised what a difference it made. It was so encouraging to the guy in 506th place. I've talked to people who are much keener competitors than I, people who take cycling and racing very, very seriously, and they say, yeah, actually it does make a difference. Even makes a difference to them. Which brings me to my second thought. Cycling alone is actually quite hard. Usually professional road cyclists are riding in teams on the big tours. You can't actually win the Tour de France on your own. You can't win the Giro d'Italia on your own. It can't be done. That's why I chose the quote of the week that we have in our bulletins. In sport, you always think the strongest guy should be going for it and getting the best results. The thing is, cycling also has a very important team aspect, which I don't think a lot of people fully grasp. The person who said that is a fellow named Chris Froome. He won the Tour de France. This is his second year this year that he's won the Tour de France. He frankly admits that his success depends on the support of his teammates. See, I'm not sure I would have gotten to the top of Mount Washington without the encouragement of Jamie. And my pals, Scott and Dylan, and the cheering on of our families. Tevis was there with bells on. Not quite literally, but close. And a whole bunch of people I'd never met before. Those were things that kept me going in Victoria. But before I get to the third thing, let's just go back to our text for today. Hebrews 10, 19 to 25 is actually the central point of the letter to the Hebrews. It's a really rich and important passage. It is actually a staple of Good Friday services. We're asked to read that every Good Friday. This passage is worth a year of sermons. What I want us to think about this morning, though, is just the last line. Let me read it to you. "And let us consider how to provoke one another to love and good deeds, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching." As always, Eugene Peterson translates this with a bit of a different spin. Let's see how inventive we can be in encouraging love and helping out, not avoiding worshiping together as some do, but spurring each other on, especially as we see the big day approaching. Now, there's all sorts of interesting discussion about who wrote the letter to the Hebrews, and no one's actually sure. Some people think it was Paul, others would say it was Apollos, others have said it's Barnabas. Rather interestingly, there's a strong argument that it was actually Priscilla, who is the woman who's mentioned in chapter 16 of Romans. But whoever wrote it, it was surely written for Jewish Christians who were living in Jerusalem. These were believers who were experiencing persecution. And they were hard, hard times they were living through. And I can imagine some of them avoiding worship. They were afraid of the consequences of being identified as a Christ follower. And all too many are experiencing that in different parts of the world even today. Now, fear is not exactly a problem for us in Qualicum Beach. But it's interesting that, strangely, most professing believers in Qualicum Beach do not go to church. Why would believers, I'm not talking about those who aren't Christian, but why would those who claim to be Jesus' followers, why would some, in our local case, most believers, not want to get together? We as a congregation, we should be trying to figure out an answer to that question. It's a really important one for us. Why don't most believers in our town want to gather together? Just as it is with the need for us to share the good news of Jesus, and in a little while I'll remind you about an evangelism workshop coming up next Saturday. But just like it's important that we share the good news of Jesus with those who have not heard it yet, we need to figure out what's keeping existing believers from gathering with one another here and elsewhere. And we need to do that, not for us, but we need to do that for them. First and foremost, for them. Because despite all the protestations I don't need to go to church to be a Christian, and all those brave claims about, well, I worship in my own way, balderdash. Lone Christians tend to not do very well. They drift, they get isolated, they end up associating only with people like themselves. They miss the chance to share their experience of their faith with others who are on the journey who need to hear their story. They lose enthusiasm, and frankly, they often end up with a rather mutated faith that doesn't actually meet the demands of authentic living. And I say that all too aware of the absolute fact that we run the risk of slipping into all those things within the church. Every one of them. We struggle with that all the time. So imagine how hard it is for those who don't have others alongside them. Because we really need one another. I know that I need you. I need friends in the faith. Just as I realized how much I benefited from all those who I rode with in Victoria and from those who were standing on the side of the road cheering us on. And you do lots of that here. You do lots of encouraging. And we'd be wise to find ways to do it more. Because I need it. And I'm pretty sure you need it too. It's what keeps us going on the hills when the times are tough. And it helps us appreciate the scenery when we're cruising. The church, whether it's a more formal gathering like the one we're enjoying here, or the church in its more diverse forms, in parachurch groups, and in home churches, and independent fellowship groups, those things are critical for a believer's growth and health. It's where we encourage one another, give courage to one another. We spur one another on. And as Peterson translates the text, especially as we see the big day approaching. I love that, the big day. That is a reference to the last day of this age. Oh no, by the way, this doesn't go on forever. This is a reference to the day that Christ will return, the day that we hear Jesus referring to, him, say in Matthew chapter 25 and elsewhere. It's the final judgment, the day when the dead are raised, when God's work of new creation is all done. Jesus spoke about these things, and he spoke about them with some frequency. It's real, so we would be wise to pay attention. We ignore this at our peril. That mutates our faith. That's why we say, "Come soon, Lord Jesus." And as such, the writer to the Hebrews wants us to keep up with the encouragement. Encourage one another as this glorious day approaches. Which brings my mind back to the third thing. So there I am. I'm riding the last few hundred meters. I'm getting near the finish line. And on the other side of the finish line are food and refreshments. That's what's waiting for us on the other side. Rest. Food, refreshment, fun. And there are all sorts of people there. And hold on. Good heavens, over there, there's Tevis. And then there's my friend Louise. That's Dylan's mom. And there's my friend Kim. That's Scott's wife. and they're waving and they're cheering loudly as we come in. We can't miss them. And you know what? I heard that. You know, I just sat up a little straighter on my bike. There were people there that I know, and there were people there I have never knowingly laid eyes on. And all of them were cheering all of us across the finish line. And people were yelling out stuff. They were, things like, "You made it! Good on you. Well done." Those were from people I didn't even know. But they knew what the ride was about. And it was it really was funny. For a moment there, really, I actually thought of that line from 2 Timothy. "I fought the good fight. I finished the race. I've kept the faith." I mean, wouldn't it be something? Wouldn't it be really something if at the end, when we're done, it's like a finish line and everybody's there. All those who've gone before us. And they're cheering us in. I mean, maybe one day you'll come cruising in at the end of your ride, and all those tough hills and perilous descents, they're all behind you. And a bunch of us will be standing there. As odd a group as we are. But that we would be standing there and yelling out, "Well done, good on you. You finished well. You made it. You're home." Encourage one another. Don't avoid worshiping together as some do. But spur each other on. Especially as we see the big day approaching. In a moment, you're going to be invited to come to the communion table. And I hope that you're each able to receive the bread and the grape juice, which is for us in some quite mysterious way the body and the blood of the Lord Jesus. And as you do so, I hope you're able to do this with the awareness that this meal is for us not only a remembrance, but it's also a foretaste of another banquet we'll one day attend. It'll be hosted by Jesus himself. It's a finish line party. That's what it is. It's a finish line party. And it's going to be the most amazing party you have ever attended. There will surely be lots and lots of people you know and love there. There'll be all sorts of people you've heard of but never met but always wanted to meet. And I firmly believe that there are a whole bunch of folks that we don't see, but who are looking at us as we take the bread and the grape juice this morning. And they're saying, "Good on you. Keep going. You are nearly there. You're coming home." I believe that.